We're going to start off our show about writing on the wall by focusing on a rather unlikely wall. Well, it's not even a wall at all. It's the internet. I talked with Stanford professor Fred Turner to hear the story of Stanford alum and 1960s countercultural techno-utopianist Stuart Brand. I discovered a story of commune living, heavy drug use, and the birth of Silicon Valley. So much of the public speech we engage in today is done on the internet, posting onto friends' MySpace pages, commenting onto message boards, or advertising through Craigslist. Besides the physical communities we are part of, most of us spend a great deal of our time in online communities as well. When we post pictures of hilarious kittens on a friend's Facebook wall, we often don't realize where this form of communication came from. It turns out, its origins are some pretty unlikely innovators. To understand Facebook, MySpace, Craigslist, or Twitter, we have to look not to Silicon Valley, not Bell Labs, not MIT's Media Lab. We have to look to the Haight-Ashbury neighborhood of San Francisco in the mid-60s.
Hallucination generation. The experimenters who try anything, stopping only at the outer edge.
Imagine all the stereotypes of 1960s counterculture. The drugs, the sex, the long hair, and loose flowing clothes. Believe it or not, the high-tech online communities we experience today really begin here.
What you wanted to do was find small-scale technologies with which to change one another's consciousness and build a new kind of society around that. Now, some of those technologies were things like, you know, LSD, they were drugs.
This is Fred Turner, an assistant professor in Stanford's communication department. He's done a lot of research about one man responsible for working towards developing mind-altering technologies. And no, I'm not talking about 1960s LSD guru Timothy Leary. I'm talking about Stuart Brand, a 1960s Stanford alum.
Back in the late 1960s, San Francisco was awash in psychedelia and in communalism. Stuart Brand was involved in both movements.
In this period of experimentation with mental states and radical utopian ideas about restructuring communities, Brand would help develop what Mac CEO Steve Jobs himself has called the conceptual forerunner of the World Wide Web.
They were tools for the transformation of the mind.
But as Fred Turner points out, the legacy and practice of Brand's utopian vision for technology were a lot more complicated than we might guess for someone coming from the idealistic Haight-Ashbury counterculture. To understand Stuart Brand's technological innovations, we need to better understand the movement he was a part of, something that at the time was called New Communalism.
You know, Theodore Roszak, who popularized the term counterculture in 1968 in a book called The Making of the Counterculture, he talked about how we need not a politics of politics, but we need what he called a politics of consciousness. We need to step back, pull away from mainstream society, and find tools with which to connect to one another. So the hope for information technologies in particular was that they would literally free your mind, allow you to connect to other minds like it, and find and build communities of literally like minds.
This was a very different way of thinking than the New Left of that period. The New Left is the youth movement that we associate with the political activities of the 60s, like the Civil Rights Movement and the protests against the Vietnam War. The New Communalist, on the other hand, had an alternate set of ideals and practices.
You know, folks in that period, particularly Brand and folks associated with psychedelia and communalism, often believed that the best way to change the world was not through politics. You didn't want to do politics to change politics like the New Left did. What you wanted to do was find small-scale technologies with which to change one another's consciousness and build a new kind of society around that. Now, some of those technologies were things like, you know, LSD. They were drugs, LSD and marijuana. Others, stereos, amplified sound. But they also included, for Brand, information technologies like the catalog.
The catalog that Turner refers to is the Whole Earth Catalog.
In 1968, with his wife Lois, his then-wife Lois, he co-founded the Whole Earth Catalog, a twice-a-year publication devoted to providing access to tools for the very large number of young people who were headed into communal living in that period. What was interesting about the tools that he wanted to provide was that they were tools for the transformation of consciousness. They were tools for the transformation of the mind.
In his 2005 commencement speech at Stanford, Steve Jobs called the catalog Google in Paperback. It was a book that seemed to contain the whole world. The illustrated catalog included reviews of books and products under 7 broad categories: understanding whole systems, shelter and land use, industry and craft, communications, community, nomadics, and learning. Like the internet, the Whole Earth Catalog contained user-generated media. People will write in with their own reviews and ideas. Unlike traditional communities found in neighborhoods, workplaces, or schools, the Whole Earth Catalog allowed people to exchange ideas and information with others thousands of miles away. The subscribers to the Whole Earth Catalog formed a social network before the concept of networks were even completely theorized. This communal exchange of information had a lot of power for brand.
Now, sometimes information technologies were about exchanging what we now today understand to be information, news, facts, tools, artifacts, that kind of stuff. But in another sense, people were enthralled at that time by the ideas of cybernetics from the 40s and tended to believe that all things were information and that LSD, for instance, was an information technology. So you can find people writing about acid as an information technology in this period. And the notion there is that information has a kind of very different sense, a sense of connection, a sense of emotionalness, a sense of consciousness unifying power. And so those two meanings of information, a meaning of information as fact and a meaning of information as experience of consciousness, get fused in this period, and they carry forward, I think, into our hopes for the personal computer. You know, Stuart Brand and the Whole Earth group that he was a part of are, I think, largely the people responsible for giving us the idea of the computer as a personally transformative device, not just an individually usable tool, but a personally transformative device. And as Brand met up with the computer scientists at places like Xerox Palo Alto Research Center, Xerox Park, where many of the features of contemporary computers were developed, he brought with him a countercultural ethos of tool use that many of the people in those worlds embraced and celebrated as a way to think about computers and about connecting to one another through computers. One. So let's talk about the early 80s when they really came into life. One.
And you'll see why 1984 won't be like 1980.
The Vietnam War is over. Ronald Reagan, Gordon Gekko, and Top Gun rule the hearts and minds of Americans. The political and social movements of the 1960s have died down, and the Whole Earth Catalog stops its publication in 1971. But a little thing called the internet is in its early developmental stages. For Brand and new communalists like him, this provided a very exciting opportunity for the exchange of information and a radical shift in the structuring of community.
Stuart Brand co-founded a community called The Well, the Whole Earth Electronic Link. At that time, it's a dial-in server. You dial in with a dial-in modem via your telephone line from home. You pay a monthly fee of about $8, and then a small fee to use the system. And what you get when you dial in is a scrolling screen of text and nothing else. But that text consists of people who you know and who you can look up on the system speaking to one another. It's a little bit like reading a script in real time as people are acting. And the scripts are organized around different topics. So you could have a topic in music, a topic in politics. You enter that area in order to talk about that thing. And then if you're a member of the Well, you also have the right to start your own links or threads, your own threads. So the point is that this is a pre-web and also a pre-visual media system.
Essentially, it's a really early bare-bones message board, like a chat room, without the animated emoticons or flashy graphics.
It's a world in which it's just text. And people who are involved in that begin trying to understand that world almost as a reincarnation of a 60s ideal. Because there are no pictures, I think, people like John Perry Barlow start fantasizing the online world, and John Perry Barlow is a lyricist for the Grateful Dead and also a Republican, start fantasizing the online world as one where we can leave our bodies behind and connect to each other through this machine as once we tried to connect to each other through the Whole Earth Catalog, through the experience of LSD and kind of collective tripping in front of giant speakers at rock shows. And I think it's the lack of visual interface, the text-based interface, that makes that possible. Now, to give you a sense of how important The Well is, it's the first place about which anyone in public that I know of uses the term virtual community.
The Well wasn't an online free-for-all of ideas. It was a structured community with moderators.
There were people, so at the Well in particular, there were in fact individual hosts. But what's interesting about the first hosts at the Well is that they came from a commune called The Farm, which was in Tennessee. And the Farm is a famous commune, famous for being a place where people tried to literally become naked to one another at a consciousness level, not a physical level, but at a consciousness level. And they got very, very good at the social dynamics of collective intimacy. And John Coate and Cliff Fagallo came from that world in the early 80s as it was kind of breaking up, or at least becoming decommunalized. And they started working for The Well, and they brought both that ethos and the tactics of interpersonal connection, literally from a commune, into the online world.
You can take the communalists out of the commune, but you can't take the commune out of the new communalists. Especially when a whole new type of technology seemed to promise revolutionary ways of experiencing the world and altering one's consciousness. Countercultural pioneers like Brand saw the internet as a means of achieving a digital utopia. But even though its founding ideals came from a hippie lifestyle of communal farming and organic food eating, the source and vision of that utopia did not exclude military research or making a few dollars.
One of the things that really surprised me when I looked into countercultural approaches to information was how much they owed to Cold War military-industrial research. The kinds of things that resulted in bulletin boards and virtual communities actually started during a much earlier phase inside Defense Department research into computing, as the internet and other interconnecting systems got arranged between computers. Email was sort of a side function, and computer scientists started literally writing to each other, leaving notes for each other. And I find that fascinating because, you know, email and the things that follow, bulletin boards and virtual communities, are not actually things that emerge outside mainstream society. Rather, they emerge right in the middle of mainstream society, even mainstream military industrial defense culture.
As the Well grew in popularity, it also became more connected to the, quote, establishment.
By the mid-80s, these folks are living in Silicon Valley. The counterculture has largely melted away. They're living in a world of very rapid employment exchange. They're working for the high-tech industry. And so the Well is both a community as a space to connect and feel intimacy with each other and a space in which to advertise your own skills and look for work. And that fusion is a really important one. That's, in my view, when new communalism becomes the new economy.
As online communities developed, they became used not just for heightened consciousness and utopian ideals, but for making business connections. But Turner points out that the history of the Well does not follow the familiar storyline of aging idealists selling out. In some ways, their core ideals were very much in line with the entrepreneurial spirit of Silicon Valley in the 1980s.
We often have a story, we often imagine that capitalism co-opts our better instincts. And I don't think that's true here. I think the two were always entwined. And I think one of the things that's so powerful about the new communalists in the 1960s was they didn't think politics would change politics. They thought business and technology would change politics. And though no right-winger would have associated with them in that time because of their social style, their ideals were, in fact, quite right-wing. You know, through business and technology and the liberation of the individual, we will achieve a new kind of society. It's for that reason that in the 1990s, they could embrace and be embraced by Newt Gingrich, as they were. You know, Newt Gingrich made the cover of Wired magazine. That's quite a thing.
A seemingly hip and liberal tech magazine featuring the former Republican Speaker of the House is quite surprising. Turner argues that the Well's complicated legacy extends into the online communities we use every day. Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, you name it.
You know, it's interesting. I see less of the utopian hopes. I see fewer of the utopian hopes that I saw in the 80s. I don't see, for example, people speaking on MySpace or Facebook about wanting to leave their bodies behind and find a new kind of intimacy in cyberspace that they can't find in the regular world. Maybe a little of the latter, but not so very much. What I do see is the fusion of community building and commerce, personal branding and friending going on at the same time. It's not as utopian as it used to be, but it actually, ironically, achieves some of the goals that the utopians hope to achieve. I think the greatest danger in both the communes of the 1960s and contemporary information communities is the illusion that politics have gone away. You know, one of the things that you really saw in the communes was when they turned away from politics, they had to still organize these communities. How did they do it? They organized them around charisma, cool, a shared sense of people like us, and the charismatic leaders gained quite a bit of power. Ultimately, these communes fell apart because they had no language for talking about how to share resources. They didn't have a politics that could be done explicitly in words. It wasn't reasoned out. It was often just about being cool. Are you cool enough to stay? If not, be gone, man. Okay. That logic permeates, or a variation of it, permeates online spaces today in that places like Facebook and MySpace, to the extent that they promise community on terms very much like the promise from the 60s. Some people come to those communities with more cultural, financial, social capital. The communities themselves, in the case of the online ones, are frequently owned by corporations seeking profit. Those things are pushed away, and again, we have very little language so far anyways to do the political negotiating about the kinds of resources that we're sharing in those spaces. And that's a problem. Google, Yahoo, when the Chinese government came knocking on their door, they said sure, and they gave people up. Okay, it's been a while, but in the 1970s, Richard Nixon came knocking on some doors. And a generation that's grown up with the internet has not lived through a time when the American government came knocking on the doors of college students. And I think for that reason, we, meaning college folks who use things like Facebook, may have stopped noticing that there's data aggregation going on in there that would be enormously advantageous for a government to have. And that under certain circumstances, governments will threaten media organizations, will seek out that information, and will pursue it. And under the current terms, we have no political language for even talking about the value of that information in the broader society or how to resist its potential resale, redistribution for political purposes.
Recently, Facebook got in trouble when it changed its terms of service. The new terms gave the corporation the right to, quote, distribute user content for any purpose, commercial, advertising, or otherwise. Consumer groups and concerned users started advocacy groups to protest Facebook's expansive new rights. Since the uproar, Facebook has since gone back to its old license agreement. And CEO Mark Zuckerberg has started a group called Facebook Bill of Rights and Responsibilities, in which users can voice their opinions. Currently, the debate is still going on.
What I would like to see is a continued emphasis on communalism with politics. If we can bring the politics back, terrific. You know, if you can get people going on Facebook reading the end user license agreement and changing their collaboration, that's great.
Stuart Brand is the author of numerous books and works part-time for the Global Business Network. The Well is still alive and thriving at well.com and is currently run by Salon Media Group. Fred Turner is an assistant professor in communication at Stanford and author of From Counterculture to Cyberculture.